The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. And Sarah Ann Lucas is on her third slice of cheesecake.
No, she's not. And she's also sharing your mic because you can't get around to her.
Because she's got a knife at my throat, ladies and gentlemen.
And carry on.
Thank you. She's now picking blackberries off the cheesecake.
Oh, mum and mud, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So, welcome back to the Business Bunker show. We've got another great guest to talk to you in the second half of the show. Loads of interesting things to cover. I'm going to start off by telling you about something that I made reference to earlier, but I want to cover in more depth now. It's the Tech Expo UK show, and it's taking place at the Clive Empson Suite at the Kent Event Centre. That's at the Agricultural Ground at Detling. And it's on Thursday, the 26th of September, and it's from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. In the world that we live in now, we're surrounded by technology, and any business that doesn't embrace it is in danger of failing. What technology is available out there? What technology will really help you run, build, and grow your business? And what technology is coming? And what is the future? Is what we all need to know. The Tech Expo is a full-day exhibition and seminars for business owners wanting to connect with suppliers who can help them run, build, and grow their businesses using the power of technology. You can meet with suppliers from different sectors, including IT, IT support, cybersecurity, software, digital marketing, online accountancy, and lots, lots more. There are also five fantastic speakers, and the speakers are the keynote speaker is Mr. Brian Sutton from Microsoft, and he's going to be talking how Microsoft is developing to help businesses. Richard Bell, who's the Chief Technology Officer of 10 Intelligence on cybersecurity. Ben Abbott, the CEO of Maximum Media, getting your business ready for voice technology. And Will Charlesworth from Child and Child, talking about digital law and IP. And Bill Burton from Dale Carnegie, Being Human in a Digital World, which is an interesting take. Then there's also workshops. Aaron Taylor, who's the CEO of 62 Tech, Stop the Sales Pitch, Start the Conversation. Mike Hacker, commonly known to us all as Hacks, who's the CEO of Prisma Broadcast, How the Proper Use of Video Can Propel Your Business Forward. And of course, the absolutely wonderful international speaker and TV sensation Zoe Cairns of ZC Social Media, Having an Adaptable Content Strategy Plan. And we're also joined by LinkedIn's Claire Derbyshire, talking about using LinkedIn for your business. There are exhibition stands still available. If you're a supplier who doesn't want to miss the opportunity to showcase your brand to hundreds of key buyers and business owners who are looking for that right tech to help them with their businesses, meeting face-to-face with them in a buzzing trade show environment, contact us for more details about our exhibition packages. As a delegate, it's free to attend. All the details can be found at techexpouk.com, techexpouk.com. And I've mentioned this a couple of times, and I'm going to mention it again because it still astounds me. 76% of small businesses have no digital presence or website at all. 76%. That's astonishing when you consider there are 5.8 million businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, you want more information about that, don't you? You want to understand actually that can't stand alone in just a figure of representing small businesses. But apparently it is.
It is. Well, I think the vast majority of small businesses, if you think about it, are self-employed people. It's just them. And they used to rely for their marketing on things like Yellow Pages. And that doesn't exist anymore.
And really. And also wonder if it goes for MLMs as well, because obviously they have their own... They don't have their own websites.
No, or... But I don't know how they would... It all depends. You're quite right. It all depends how they put the stats together. Yeah. But... you know, because a lot of the MLM marketers I know at least have Facebook pages or whatever.
Most of our business comes, through contacts, through other people saying, look at the website,
Yeah.
It's a huge amount of trade. So how do they
stay? 76%.
Yeah. I think you have to think about the types of people that haven't got it, And they're nearly all self-employed people. They're all one-man bands or one-woman bands, the travelling hairdresser, the local plumber, the local painter and decorator just don't have websites. And if you take the research at face value, they don't have business, business Facebook pages or LinkedIn pages or Twitter handles. You know, I'm sure most of them must have some kind of digital presence, even if it's only a personal account.
To be fair, though, we get quite a few guests on here who don't have Twitter.
Yeah.
And they've started Twitter because this is a really good platform for them to start to build their social media attention.
Yep.
So we see it a lot.
Yeah, we do. We do. And it's amazing. I own a web development agency, and it's amazing how many businesses we see that come to us that go, think I need a website, and I've got like 50 quid to spend. You go, yeah, okay, good. So it's an interesting one.
But also, and I don't want to get carried away on websites again, it's the amount of work that you as the company, you as the person has to put in to your profile building on that website. It's hard work writing the copy, especially if you're not a copywriter.
Well, this is entirely the issue, isn't it? The reality of where we are with this is as normal, fear of the things that you don't know. And I'm not denigrating people. The problem they have, and I just made reference to people that come to me with wanting a website, is because they don't understand the technology. They don't really understand what to ask for. They don't understand who to ask. You know, a lot of people go, do you know what? I need a website. But a website could cost you anything from 800 quid to 80,000 quid. You don't know what you're buying. Yeah. If you're not technically inclined, you don't know what you're being sold. A classic example of that today on Twitter, I won't embarrass them. Somebody went, I've just done a website for quite a large company, and they put a picture of it, and it was appalling. It was absolutely appalling. It was 20 years out of date in terms of the technology they used to develop the website. Mm. And it looked it as well. Mm. You think, they've just put this up as a website, for goodness sake. But
it's a tick box thing.
Yeah.
We need a website. Right, can you go and do it? Yes, you're a web designer. Okay, can you go and do it? But what they don't realise is actually the amount of work that self has to put into that website. Yeah.
That was one of the traps we fell into, that we expected our website just to self-generate inquiries. Of course. But it's not. It took us 2 years to build up one sector of the business because we concentrated solely on that and said, right, we're getting it wrong. We need new keywords. We need to put more articles out there. Two years before we started to see results.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But nobody tells you this. Nobody talks about this. Nobody's being honest about it. Mm. It's hard getting a good website up and running that looks attractive, that's saying the right things that people want to hear, that they can actually relate to.
Yep. And it costs money, as does everything. And the problem is, and I feel for people, I don't, you know, I'm not having a go at them.
No.
If you don't know, you don't know, and therefore you don't know what its value is to you. So you don't know how much you're going to have to spend. And just spending money is no guarantee that you're going to get what you need. Yeah, it's a difficult thing. And I think that's where the issue is.
And it changes and evolves and it grows. Like my website needs a new face.
Yeah.
It needs a new words. It needs... But I don't know, if you don't know where that is, focus is going, why should you then go and pay somebody to get it up and running when you're like, hold on a minute, we've got a few things going on here, I need some, and again, it comes back to what we've said, what's the focus here, what's the purpose of this? We talked about, when you were talking about Michael Parks now, and we were talking about planning, well, what's everybody's purpose, what's the vision here, and if you haven't got one, how can you share that with somebody else?
It's getting insight into the psyche of the person that's looking at your website, because we deal in a technical manner and we talk in professional language, but that's not how the layperson speaks.
Exactly.
And so to get into their mindset and work out exactly what they're looking for when they go on to Google or Yahoo or whatever to try and find
it,
it's incredibly difficult to do.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It is a very technical area, and I think that's where most people shy away from it, because it's this not understanding. We have a nice blog about it, actually, on Kent Business Radio website, the six things that you should do before you commission anyone to do a website for you, the questions you should ask yourself.
Yeah.
It was written by Aaron Taylor, actually, and Aaron is one of the speakers at Tech Expo, talking about that very subject, about how you develop your digital presence and what it takes and the questions you should ask of you and the people you're asking to do it. And that's really important. It's a really good talk. So get along. That's all happening at the Tech Expo as well.
Nice.
Yeah, nice one. We're going to talk to Peter in a moment. Just before we do, we probably need to do a couple more emails, because we've got quite a few, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Help bridge the gap between schools and businesses. Ah, This has been a massive hot topic on here, isn't it, for the last month or so?
Yeah.
So in Kent, we offer a practical way for businesses to engage with education through Skills 3030. In this two-hour event, businesses hear from a local authority and relevant recruitment groups while students take part in an employment-related workshop. And then both groups get together for a facilitated speed networking. Now, the programme for business is one-hour networking presentations, FSB lobbying update, Kent Supported Employment Team, Enterprise Advisor Network, and Paul Andrews on Skills and Employment. Now, for students, it's a one-hour workshop on how to present yourself at work, how to stand out in your new job, and use LinkedIn to your advantage. Now, businesses and students come together for 40 minutes facilitated networking and 10 minutes free networking. Now, for information, email alison.parmer@fsb.org.uk. And these events are held throughout the FSB in Kent with Association with Jobs in Kent and the Business Bunker Show. Hello. And the next event can be found on the 3rd of July, and that's at St George's Church of England Foundation School at Broadstairs. And then the following one is the 25th of September, Haysbrook School at Tunbridge. And you need to go online to book the details. And that is the there's another one. Oh my God, I hate saying this so late in the year. 20th of November at Longfield Academy in Dartford. Don't worry, we'll always remind you throughout the year. What?
I've got one for June next year as well.
No.
Yeah. At
2020.
I've got June 2020.
For a 30-30.
Yeah, for a 30-30 at the Wilmington Academy.
Nice.
Yeah, on June the 21st, 2020.
Okay, so tell me what you want from businesses.
To come. I want them to come.
So you want them to give you their time?
Yeah, 2 hours.
For what? What's the purpose?
Basically, it's a two-way street. It's to find out what Generation Z, that's the people that are currently leaving school, what it is they have to offer and what they bring to and what they want from the world of work. And it's your opportunity as a business to influence schools and students into what we need as employers.
Isn't it interesting? Because I feel quite that there's an arrogance from employers.
Yeah.
That they hold the power, control in employment. And actually what you're saying is...
They don't. Not at the moment, they don't.
Mm.
There's a skill shortage. There's 833,000 unfilled full-time jobs in the UK, and we have full employment as well, so they don't hold anything like that. And it's one of the huge mistakes that employers are making. We find it time after time. Employers are coming to us and saying, we can't find the right people, we can't find the right skills. Well, that's because you're not offering the right jobs. That's a bit harsh, because there is a skill shortage anyway. But basically, you've got to start looking at salaries and what you offer people and the way that you offer them. One of the biggest eye-openers for a lot of businesses when they talk to Generation Z is that at first they go, haha, typical of the young generation. And then they start to think about what it is they're being told. I heard a conversation between a young person and a business owner, and the business owner said, the hours of work in our place are from 8:30 until 5. And the young person went, let me stop you there. I don't get up till 10. And I went, no, but it's 8:30. And he said, no, I don't get up till 10. And he went, but you need to start work at 8:30. And he went, no, I don't get up till 10. And he was astounded. But what I said to him is, but in this day and age, that employee might not get up till 10, but he'll still be working, or she will still be working at 10 at night, because we all have smart devices, and those smart devices don't get switched off. We still get work emails. We still get work messages. We still do things. We talk to people, right? You know, we live in a connected 24/7 world. The old days of the 20th century, 9 to 5, are dead, dead as a doornail. So trying to structure your business around that is never going to attract Generation Z. It's not what they do. It's not how they work. They work in a completely different way. And we've got some really interesting people. A good friend of mine, James Gardiner, who runs a manufacturing business in Southeast London, Kent Borders, he's trying very hard to accommodate that. And accommodating flexibility in a production environment is the most difficult thing ever, because you've got production lines to run. But he's trying really hard to make it flexible, because if you think about it, the biggest issue that we all face in our society now is flexible working. You know, we have different forms of families now. There's so many single parent families, so many people coming back into the workplace. People want to work flexibly.
It's got me thinking, because I actually think, you know what, you should get up at half past eight and have respect and come into work. That's one. Immediately,
yeah,
you're
old.
And then the next thing is, I'm like, but that guy might be, let's call him a guy, might be offering this amazing work ethos and work from 10 literally till
midnight.
So we're missing out on something. So let's give to everybody rather than.
And also, in a huge number of businesses, the hours that you put into doing something are immaterial.
There was an article yesterday I saw online from a company in Tunbridge who's now offered flexible holidays. They're not saying that they can take holidays whenever. You don't get 20 or 25 days.
Yeah.
Have as much holiday as you like. And they have productivity. And enormously.
Yeah. I've got a company based in Fruitworks that do a four-day week.
I know, it's great.
Yeah, and they just do a four-day week. But some of their staff complain. They said, we ain't got enough time to do everything.
There's that company in Brighton, isn't it, that we spoke about ages ago, and I said to you, they now say to them, look, you get unlimited holidays.
Yeah. Mm.
So actually it's based on the productivity of what you're doing rather than actually the limitations of what you're doing.
And it puts an impetus on the member of staff to know that they can't put all the weight onto their colleagues.
You've got it.
We live in a different world. And so a lot of the benefit of 30-30 is two-way. It's for employers to start learning this, that, you know, the old ways of doing things don't cut the mustard. And if you want to attract people, talented people into your organisation, and you're offering them the chance to work 8:30 till 5 and they don't get up till 10, guess what? They ain't going to take the job.
But then we have, on the other hand as well, we have, say, for example, millennials or even X and Ys to a point, where companies are saying, look, we're flexible here.
Yeah.
And they still turn up at 7:30 or 7 o'clock and leave at 6 going, oh, I've been here. And it's like a trophy. So we've got a mixed culture going on in employment at the minute.
We've got a mixed society going on. It's called diversity, and the whole thing is to stop believing we're still in 1952. In the 20th century, we devised systems of working that were based on factory production lines, even in offices. Yeah, you had groups of people that came in at the same time, left. Think of the damage that ethos does. Think about the damage to the environment, where I think it's something like 7 million people get up at 7 in the morning and travel to London in the same 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then come home in the same 2 hours at night. What is that all about? It's ridiculous.
Why are we still going to London to work?
Well, all of those things are the things that need to change. And 30-30 doesn't set out to change those things. It just sets out to get people thinking about what young people want from the world of work, what the talent that's available is looking for. And then from the other side of the coin, it gives us in the world of work the chance to tell people in schools about working. We're going to talk to Peter in a moment. Peter runs a cookery school. One of the things that is in massively short supply, it's more rare than unicorn poo, are chefs. Yeah. You can't get chefs for love nor money. Yeah. It's really difficult. People don't think about careers in the hospitality industry. Yeah. People don't think about careers in the care and healthcare industry because they don't have any experience of it. They don't know what's involved. They don't know what's going on. And that's not their fault. Yeah. So the whole of 30-30 is about introducing people to the whole world of work, what's available, how it's available, and also to employers to get them to see how they need to develop and grow and change to be able to recruit into that world. So that's 30-30. That was good, wasn't it?
That was a good way, wasn't it?
Anyway, I've got one tweet to read, and then I want to talk to Peter. It's a new supporter of the show called Fit for Trade, and that's their Twitter handle, Fit for Trade. And they said, Vanilla Web, can you give us a shout-out, please? We're hosting seminars Wednesday and Thursday, Skills Thursday, Skills Bridge the Gap in Fenestration. The fenestration industry. You don't know that, is?
Mm.
Well,
Windows?
Yeah, exactly. It is. Yeah, well done. Fenestra, it's French for windows. You. Yeah, no, the fenestration industry is the windows, glazing and doors industry. And Fit for Trade are running skills workshops on Wednesday and Thursday. Hey, look, and doesn't that fit nicely with what we were just saying? It's almost as if this show was produced, isn't it?
And that we rehearsed it.
And we got them to tweet that in. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, give them a follow on Twitter, Fit for Trade. All one word, Fit for Trade. Give them a follow. Find out about the fenestration industry.
Interesting.
Yeah, cool. Do you know what? I want to speak to our next guest.
Thank goodness, because I'm not going to eat my cheesecake.
You've been trying to eat it for ages, haven't you? I've been talking just so that you couldn't eat it.
Thanks. Go on, Peter, it's all over to you.
Yeah. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. Peter Van Zyl. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Peter is from the Checkers Kitchen in Deal. Peter has bought some absolutely fantastic food he's made. There are two types of bread. There's some ricotta cheese. There's some onion relish. And the most to die for, lightest, most fabulous, calorie-free, sugar-free, butter-free.
It is amazing.
Egg-free. Everything free.
And I've just had a message saying, step away from the cheesecake fatty. We can talk about this cheesecake because this is amazing, Peter. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure.
It's great to be here, and it was very interesting to listen to what Denise had to say as well. So, Checkers Kitchen.
Yeah. Tell us about it, because tell us the history of the Checkers in Deal. Deal's a lovely, for those that don't know, Deal's a lovely seaside town down on the Kent coast. It's a gorgeous place, isn't it? And it quite often wins awards as one of the nicest places on the coast.
Yeah. It's you know, often in the national newspapers. It's the place to be and the place to live and the place to eat.
It is technically France, isn't it?
Yeah. It's pretty much just that. So the Checkers, you know, it was a coaching inn, actually. In the 1700s,
right.
And probably even earlier.
Right. And whereabouts are you in relation to the town? Are you in the town or on the outskirts?
No. We're actually 2 miles from the town centre of Deal, outside to the north side of the town.
Okay.
So you got to drive past...
you're on the golf course, aren't you?
Well, we are. We're on the 15th.
Is that by Pine Calyx?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay, other way.
We're the other way towards Sandwich.
Okay, okay.
On Sandwich Bay, basically.
Okay.
So we are 2 miles out of the town centre, and the Checkers, like I said, was a coaching inn, and then it became this pub in the 60s, 70s, 80s, owned by all sorts of wonderful people. I got hold of it in 2004,
right.
Ran it as a pub for 10 years. I then met my current business partner, Stephanie Amon, which has to be the most cleverest woman I've ever met.
I know Stephanie, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. She's very...
She's been involved in lots of different things too.
Lots of things. She's completely inspiring.
Yeah.
And she really just wanted to do good to people. So she and I got together, and it didn't take me long to be convinced by Steph to change the pub into a cookery school.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to teach and have a cookery school, and now I've got it.
Wow.
So that all happened. We started talking maybe 7 years ago,
right, okay.
And then it happened a year after that. So we've been going for flat out, as we are right now, for 5 years.
Okay. And you're entirely a cookery school?
We're entirely a cookery school. We do lunches. We do dinners. It's got to be private ones.
Yeah.
We do lots of private events for golfers.
Okay.
Because it was such a drinking hole for the golfers, you know, all this time. So we still got a little bar that they can use.
Right.
But they seem to like to come and eat the food that I prepare and cook for them.
I don't blame them. Having tasted some of it, I don't blame them at all.
But you know, Paul, I'm here today to really plug our team building events.
Right, okay.
Today, you know, I'd like to tell people to come to us to come and enjoy a day or half a day of team building so they can cook.
All right.
In teams, they can cook in pairs, they can cook singularly, they can choose what they want to cook. We have ideas of things that we know that work in teams.
So basically what you're telling me here is you've got a corporate version of MasterChef and Great British Bake Off.
You're absolutely right. Got just there.
Yeah.
So if you look at our brochure, you can see how beautiful the place has been kitted out.
It's gorgeous.
It's high tech. It's beautiful. It's in the country. Mm. There's maybe 70, 80 cows right opposite the cookery school.
Fresh milk then, eh?
Yeah. And cheese.
Yeah. So let's explore this because this is fascinating and very interesting. So, as one of the offerings of the cookery school is these team building events, as you say, where companies, well, anyone, I guess, or any kind of group of people can come along and undertake cookery of one kind or another. So tell us, I mean, I guess there's different ways of doing this. What are the kind of things that people do when they come along on a team building exercise? You know, are they cooking 3-course meals or are you teaching them things like baking bread or, you know, how does it work?
Yeah, you know, all of those things.
Right, okay.
We can do all of those things and we do all of those things actually. It depends on how large the group is.
Right.
We can take anything from 6 people, you know, otherwise it's not worth us being there if it's less.
Sure.
Or the client just pay a lot more.
Yeah.
From 6 people to 30 people. We're doing one on Friday for 30 people, actually. So that's, you know, we got to organize that with precision, really.
Yeah, sure.
So that everybody gets to do what we promised them they will do.
Yeah.
People seem to like fashionable foods. You know, food is a complete fashion thing, you know. Mm. And for some reason, the public is fascinated by Thai food. They all want to learn to cook Thai or they all want to eat Thai, which is not a problem.
Sure.
Because I'm a chameleon.
Are you a green or a red chameleon? That's the thing.
Green one, I think. So we can offer anything for people. Sometimes the companies would like to have a meeting first. So they arrive at maybe 9:30. We give them a very small breakfast or a snack, coffee and tea. They will have a meeting maybe for 1.5 hours. We'll give them another snack. We will serve them a light lunch, and I mean really light.
Hmm.
Maybe just slices of pizza, soup and sandwiches, because after all, they're going to cook a full meal afterwards.
Right.
So then, you know, they will be there for the whole day. They will cook. They can either decide to then stay in our cookery school and eat it all together, which is what we prefer them to do, really.
Sure. Yeah.
Or some of them, you know, if they've got children they need to pick up and that kind of thing, they can have their food boxed up and take it home and enjoy it later with their families. So people can have half-day courses, they can have full-day courses, they can do as much as they want to do, or they can do as little. They can even just stand and watch me doing it all.
Right, okay.
I do that quite often where it's basically a demonstration.
Yep, okay.
So people will all stand around my enormous island and hopefully with glasses of wine and pints of beer and just enjoy and see how it's all happening.
Yeah.
And it's just it's fascinating for me to hear the questions people ask.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
There's still people luckily for me, mm-hmm. who struggles to roast potatoes.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it makes me feel very clever.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And cooking is one of those things. It's very voguish at the moment as well because of the various TV programs we have.
Yeah.
But I was reading your brochure. You can choose the cuisine. As you said, Thai is very popular. You know, you've got the whole range of Asian food, Italian, Indian, Japanese. Yes. Japanese I love. Middle Eastern. Or you can make a request. So there's a fascinating range of different things you can do as well.
We are completely and utterly flexible. Mm. Whatever the people want, Stephanie will be talking to them when they take the calls. I'm lucky enough not to have to answer the phone anymore. So she would do all of that. She arranged it all, find out what it is they're after. She will then come to me and she and I will thrash it out how the day will work and a menu.
Right.
That will suit them. It goes back to them. They decide, oh, no, we don't like this. And then we start again. And or yes, this is perfectly fine. So we will basically do what is humanly possible for us to please the customer.
Mm, absolutely.
Flexibility is the way forward, really.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. I'm looking at the brochure. It's a gorgeous place. As you said, The kitchen and the food preparation area and the eating areas all look wonderful, but you've got stained glass windows as well in the
club. and that's from the Victorian times, right? That we kept those.
Yeah,
they were in the pub when I bought them,
right?
And we had them restored, and and they're there, and they're beautiful, and they give color. They make feel people at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it is literally like inviting people into my very enormous kitchen and just have fun. I did a dinner party for a group of golfers. It was, I don't know how many, quite a few of them. But I didn't realize they were bringing their wives.
Right.
and it was just so lovely because I'm cooking live.
Right.
When I cook in front of you.
Yeah.
The ladies were coming up too, but the chaps as well.
Right.
They wanted to know, I've never pan-fried asparagus. I've never tasted that. Mm. Is this how you do it? And, it goes on.
Yeah.
So it was really, really lovely. And I said to them, it was so nice to have them all there because it felt like I had them in my house.
Yeah.
And they just paid to be there. Mm. So
it's fascinating, isn't it? When you and it was interesting when you said, look, people quite often come along just to watch you cook, and I can really imagine that because it is fascinating watching an expert do something, isn't it? And it's awe inspiring, scary because I could never do that. I'd just burn my hand if I did that. and it's really quite odd when you because some of it's a confidence thing as well.
Yes,
just. As an interesting aside, my youngest son, who doesn't work in a business at all, but he just loves cooking, and he's a very good cook. He actually works in financial services in publishing, but he was sharing a house in London with some folks, and one of the guys said to him, and Stu does all the cooking, and Stu won't do microwave food or anything like that. He cooks everything fresh. He'll go to the supermarket, he'll buy everything fresh, and he'll cook it.
Yeah.
Even just for a snack at lunch, he just won't eat rubbish. And so he ended up doing all the cooking for the flatmates. One day, the house they lived in, one of his flatmates, his father actually owned the house, and he came home one Friday and said, I've got a friend coming to dinner tomorrow night, just the two of us. Would you cook us something? So Stu went, what do you want? And he went, up to you. I'll leave it up to you. So Stu cooked him a three-course meal, and this person's friend turned out to be Lloyd Grossman.
Oh.
I just cooked dinner for Lloyd Grossman. Right, okay, good.
Of course you did.
Yeah. How did that go? And he said he was very complimentary about my food, and he was very gracious and lovely. So it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. And it doesn't matter. Lloyd also gets hungry.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Food brings joy. That's what it does. That's what you've brought to us today. You brought some joy, and people can see and feel that because everybody's like, oh my God, you're high on sugar and everything. And we've just said, there's hardly anything in there, is there, in the cheesecake?
You know, that cheesecake is, dare I say, almost healthy.
Mm.
If you look at the amount of fruit on top, fresh fruit, so that's not been tampered with at all. And then in the entire amount of cream cheese that I've used, is only 2 tablespoons of added sugar.
Right.
So, if you divide that up between a lot of people, your added sugar intake is very, very low.
Your team building days or corporate days, or have you had the experience of having a team come in that you can see are absolutely broken in their communication, and through the day you can absolutely, through the joy of food and coming together, you can see how the possibilities are there for them to start to rebuild connections again?
Well, Bert, I can't say that I've seen that they were broken, but I can certainly see as the day progresses, they do work together, they're having fun, they're calling each other names, they flick the spatulas with cream or things in between them. And a lot of people are very, very competent in the kitchen, and they really want to make this a huge success.
Yeah.
So they really go, hell for leather to
make it. So you're seeing competencies of cooking.
Absolutely, yes.
Because we hear that actually we don't cook anymore in the kitchen.
No, I think people cook. No, they do. I think it's the confidence thing that's the problem. Mm. And I think people are a bit worried when they think they're coming to a cookery school, they have to be at a certain level. They don't have to be at any level. I will pick them up at whatever level they are.
So we can burn water and we can still join you.
I was going to ask Peter if anybody's ever done this where you've gone, do you know what? I wouldn't. No. You know, just don't step away from a kitchen. I would
just sit there and look beautiful. Yeah.
Fish and chips or Chinese takeaway. That's your best thing.
Well, I've seen it, but of course I haven't said it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because
yeah.
we want them to come back. You know, on my way driving here, I drove through. I don't know where I drove through, but I went past Gévaudan. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know who they are.
They're, yes.
They are the people who makes the lovely
smells.
Yeah. Smells for the toothpaste, yeah. So they were one of our very first team building companies that came to us.
Right.
And that was very interesting because they had very good taste.
Yeah.
And smell, and they were really into what they were doing.
Right.
So that was good. You know, and Pfizer's, there's a group of scientists that come to us every year. And already this year, they want to know what they're going to do for Christmas. So they do it as a Christmas outing.
I love that.
So they come and they have a little meeting. I would serve them a lunch and then they cook and then they take it home. So usually it's something fancy Christmas baking, but sometimes they wanted to cook their meal as well. So I'm on the treadmill thinking already what I can do with them to entice them to come back.
It's funny you should say that. I'm going to read this tweet, which isn't entirely relevant, but it is, and I'll tell you why in a moment. It's a tweet from a company called VenomTech. And VenomTech are based at Discovery Park at Sandwich. And it's run by a guy called Dr. Steve Trim. And Steve used to be a Pfizer's scientist. And VenomTech now drug discovery through various venoms, okay? And they've sent a tweet and they said, we'd love a shout out on today's Business Bunker show, please. VenomTech meets Game of Thrones. Can you really kill with a poison kiss? And they've got a video to prove it, yeah? And the way you can see this video, it's a YouTube video, but the easiest way is to follow them on Twitter, and their Twitter handle is Venom Research. So follow them on Twitter, see the video they put together and have a look. One of the reasons I raised it while you were talking is it just so happens that, one, you just mentioned Pfizer's, but two, Steve also does a thing called Dr. Steve's Scientific Sauce, and he makes a really, really evil venom chili sauce, and it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. So it kind of squares the circle in what we were talking
absolutely.
About there.
It's all food. Yeah. But I would love Steve to bring his team to us to cook with me. But there will be no venom.
Oh, they can bring their own.
Absolutely. Yes, and I'm not kissing any of them either.
Just thinking about that. Did you say you were South African?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
What's the strangest, not that it's relevant that you're South African particularly, it's just that I've eaten some strange stuff in South Africa, like Malpani worms and stuff like that. Have you not had them?
No.
Have you not?
Why would I eat a worm?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did. Three of them. They were horrible.
They're probably all laughing at you.
Yeah,
like,
he's the idiot that did that. Nobody does that. Yeah.
Were those worms hairy?
Yeah, they were.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah, they're big, thick things.
I'll just stamp on them.
It's horrible. They were barbecued as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's horrible. I'll tell you what they were like. It's like Australian witchetty grubs.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah, because we all know what they taste like, don't we?
Yeah. Do you not?
No, thank the Lord.
I'll tell you what they taste like, bird. They taste like the Malpani worms.
No.
as awful.
Yeah. So what's the strangest thing you cooked is what my question was going to be.
Oh, gosh. It's not that strange anymore, but it must have been crocodile.
Right, okay. Mm.
Yeah. We don't really see crocodile in the menu anymore. There was this phase in the late 80s, and it was crocodile. If nobody can describe what anything tastes like, they say it tastes like chicken.
So
guess what? Crocodile tastes like chicken.
Yeah. But I've had crocodile and it looked like lobster tail, a big one, but tasted like chicken.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It is horrible.
No. It's just a fad.
So you know what? And I'm fed up with fads.
Yeah.
I spoke in the week to Steph and I said to her, I'm so sick of people saying we've got to make a soup out of the tops of the, I can't think of what the things are growing on the side of the streets where we walk. Stinging nettles.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, for goodness sake. Why on earth do you want to eat soup made from stinging nettles? You know, it's full of dust. It's full of car fumes. Yeah. It's full of dog whatever. And, you know, and so it goes on. So why do you want to put that in your soup. And I watched something where these ladies on television cooked, and they were so proud. Their soup was had only three ingredients, and one of them was stinging nettles. And mm-hmm. I thought, I bet it was awful.
we kind of need to move on because we're getting towards the end of the show. But you know, River Island, the is it River Island? No, River Cottage. River Cottage. River Island's a fashion chain, isn't it? River Cottage with Hugh Ferningstall Whittington, or whatever his name was. Yeah. He did a thing a couple of years ago where they do a stinging nettle eating competition in some village in Wiltshire. It's ridiculous. Yeah. They're just eating piles of stinging nettles.
If you want your mouth on fire for the next 2 weeks afterwards.
I think it was an excuse to drink vast quantities of cider is what I think it was, to be honest.
Can I just say one more thing? Mm. So if you guys come and cook with me, we really do look after you.
Okay.
We really, really go out of our way to look after you. And you know, Paul, I would love to cook with you and some other people and you, Bert. Yeah. And Denise has already promised she's going to bring her company to us. So that would be great.
We could do a channel radio.
We could. Yeah. Well, we'll introduce you to Jules as well, because she does the cookery show on channel radio.
Does she?
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Mm. No, we will do that. Listen, Peter, it's been fascinating talking to you. It's been even more fascinating eating your food, I have to be honest.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. If people want to find out about the Chequers Kitchen Cookery School, what's the best way to do that?
You know, you could just go on our website, which is www.checkersdeal.co.uk.
Check it out. All the contacts are on there. All the social media contacts are on there. Phone number and all the details about the events that they handled there at the Chequers Kitchen. Peter, thank you so much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Do stay with us for the remaining couple of minutes of the show. We haven't got very much longer, and we've got a few things still to go over. So what you got, Bert?
Well, I want to just bring up...
Oh, sorry to interrupt. That's really rude of me, but I missed something that I needed to come back to. Because Emma Cattrall's had a go at me.
I was literally just going I was going to bring that up, because I actually like the fact that people start to communicate with us and join the conversation on Twitter. Go on, you say it. She's having a go at you.
Yeah, well, Emma said...
Or is she? She's having a go at me as well.
Yeah.
I don't think she is having a go, by the way.
No, she's raised a very good point.
I love it.
Yeah. What she said is, what about the customer? We were talking about not working 9 to 5 anymore. What about the customers that still want your attention 9 to 5? The million that works different hours can't service them.
I agree.
Yeah, that's true. Some kind of. But bearing in mind, it all depends how your customers contact you. Yeah. Because if they contact you by email or by Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or whatever, they can contact you at any time. It all depends how you organize that. Yes, you're absolutely right, Emma. There's a part of the day where people expect you to be at work. But do they expect you to be at work or someone to be at work?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think I brought it up last time. It was News's birthday and I wanted to order. Sorry, you've got this beautiful cheesecake, but there's a great company called Please Cake online. Mm. They're awesome. And I mucked up for some reason or other. Anyway, emailed them at about 9:30 in the evening, not expecting a response, just saying, look, please, can you help? Blah, 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 blah. Gone on to book it online. Can't get the cheesecake delivered for her birthday. Blah, 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 blah. They immediately, there was no bot. It was a person on the other end going, hey, Sarah, look, let me see what I can do in the kitchen tomorrow. Blah, 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 blah. That's what I want from a company.
Yeah.
Now, 9 to 5, I can't do it because I'm working myself.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, it worked brilliantly. I agree with Emma as well. That we need to provide a 24/7 service. This is the honesty of everything.
That is entirely the point. The whole point is we have to restructure how we do work. The reason that people want to contact us between 9 and 5 is because we always told them to contact us between 9 and 5.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't actually need to contact us between 9 and 5. Some of us want to contact us at 11 o'clock at night. And
because most of us are working 9 to 5, so I can't contact you 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And that's the honesty of it. Or I don't want a delivery 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Or I want it when I'm at home.
Yeah. The answer to Emma's question is customers want to talk to someone when they want to talk to someone.
Yeah.
And what we need to do as businesses is to put in place systems and processes and methods for customers to be able to contact us when they need to contact us.
I wanted to ring a hotel yesterday in Peterborough.
Yeah.
It took me 8 minutes to speak to a human being.
Yeah, that's...
I don't want that.
No.
I don't want that.
I hate IVR boxes.
I do not get you anymore. There's no need for that.
Yeah.
The receptionist is there. I just want to ring this number and she pick it up and tell me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, it's beyond me.
One of the things that I've said in talking to people about artificial intelligence, there's a lot of people running around going, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. Robots are going to take over. They're going to become sentient and we're all going to die and there's going to be no jobs. Actually, artificial intelligence is a massive opportunity for us to go back to personal service.
Well, I tell you who's got it spot on, and we've talked about it, which is hilarious, because actually it's giving us a model that doesn't make us flexible, but it is making us flexible. It's McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But can I just say, I've got a robot at home.
Have you?
I keep meaning to tell you about this.
There's no way to talk about your children.
They're not there anymore. I've got a robot, and I think it's probably the best thing that I've ever bought in my life. I'm serious. And I can't believe I haven't spoken about it before. I know, my teeth are out and everything. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've called him Ernest. My whole family think I'm mad.
I'm almost reluctant to ask what it is.
It's a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, right, okay.
You've got to get one.
Really?
I tell you, especially if you've got a dog. I know, Peter.
Do you have to handle it yourself?
No, it just lives under my settee. I say, come on, Ernest, out you come. I press the button, out he comes. 2 hours. I'm telling you, Denise, it's amazing.
And it sucks everything up?
It's amazing.
And he goes around everywhere
and he plans it all and everything. He maps out. I love this. Look at you all. That, to me, is an amazing use of AI.
Yeah. No, I'm stunned.
Really? Why?
I
love it.
Yeah.
And then one of my clients...
Hold on. What? Does it have the Dalek fallacy?
No, it's... you want to make think... I think when we think of robots, we think of them looking like humans.
Yeah.
Don't we?
Yeah, no, but...
this doesn't...
Do you know what I'm talking about with the Dalek fallacy? When I was a kid and everyone was scared stiff of Doctor Who and the Daleks because Daleks were taking over the world, there was a really good way of stopping Daleks from doing that, which was just to go upstairs.
I don't get it.
Well, Daleks can't go upstairs.
I don't want him to.
Yeah, but can you or Arnie go upstairs?
Ernest can't go upstairs.
No. See. Dalek fallacy. But can't go upstairs.
Will Ernest work upstairs when you carry him up?
I could carry Ernest up.
And what will he do when he gets top of the stairs?
He'll go off.
Yeah, but will he fall down? Will he know there's stairs?
Well, I could program it. You can program him to not go down them.
God.
I know, right? It's unbelievable. You've got to get yourself one of these robots.
Right.
And then there was on the gadget show, they had what you can do one in the garden. What's it called? Lawnmower.
Right.
You can get them in the lawn. One of my clients has got them.
I wonder how good those are.
They're amazing. I'm telling you, you've got to, but don't take it. It's one of those things. It saves me time so that when I come to Hoover, it's done brilliantly. It's not going to take away your hoovering. What it does is minimalizes it.
Okay.
And that's what I believe AI is all about.
Cool. Good.
There we go.
We're almost at the end of the show, and I've got a couple of things I still need to tell you about.
I've got millions of emails. We've had a great show, haven't we?
While I'm doing this, if you look for anything that's important, that runs out this week, I want to. If you run a CIC, that's a community interest company, or a CIO, which is a community interest organisation, do you have expansion plans? Do you require additional working capital, or do you need support to fund a new project? The Kent Community Foundation is one of 46 accredited local community foundations across the United Kingdom who awards grants to charities and CICs. In addition to awarding grants, the Kent Community Foundation has been supporting community interest companies since 2012 with a social lending program called Kent Social Enterprise Loan Fund, KSELF. KSELF is a blended loan and grant fund which aims to bridge the increasing funding gap for Kent's new and existing social enterprises by offering an unsecured facility between £10,000 and £100,000. To appeal to many of the CICs who successfully apply for this option is that the financial package includes an element of grant of up to 30% of the loan amount. Once the finance is repaid, Kent Community Foundation will reloan and reinvest it back into the community. In addition to offering funding, Kent Community Foundation will also provide assistance and business support throughout the whole process from a dedicated investment fund manager. They've given me a whole list of people that have borrowed from this, but we haven't really got time to read it out. I will read it out next week. But if you want to find out more, go to kentcf.org.uk/apply-for-a-loan or call James Horn, on our investment manager, on 01303 815 153. That's James Horn, 01303 815 153.
Look, I've got a million emails, but these are the ones that are going to be going out of date, and I really want to get them over to you. So Marsh Breakfast Networking, 23rd of May, and that's 7:45 till 9:15, the ship in Dimchurch. Then we've got Marsh Networking over coffee, and that's the 5th of June, 10 till 12, and that's the Sinkport Arms in New Romney. And then the last one that's going to run out, but you really need to hear about this, is free employment law breakfast seminars. And the topics are non-disclosure agreements with Carl Vincent, Brexit implications for employment law with Paul McAlvey, forgive me if I've pronounced your name wrong, and managing staff absence, and that's David Morgan. And the one that is coming up quite soon is Sandwich, and that's on Thursday the 6th of June, 8:45 till 10:15. And that's at Discovery Park in Sandwich. Now, this is to book your free place. Please email your name, company and preferred venue, as well as the number of tickets required. And that's to marketing@girlings.com. So this is from Girlings. Awesome. Love a bit of that.
Fantastic. You got anything else you need to read before we go?
No.
Okay. I need to tell you about, I don't need to tell you my shopping list that I've just been sent, but I do need to tell you about our sister show, the Business Bunker Extra Show, this Friday, presented by Amanda. And this week, her co-host is Richard Bell, who's a security expert from Tan Intelligence. And their guest is the lovely Judy Stevens. So do tune in to the Business Bunker Extra Show at 11 a.m. on Friday here on channelradio.co.uk/2 or bizradio.co.uk for Amanda and Richard and their guest Julie on the Bunker Extra Show. Big thank you once again to ZC Social Media and ZC Live 2019 for supporting this week's show. A massive thank you to our two guests, the lovely Denise Ford from Michael Park Surveyors Limited over there on the Midway City Estate in Rochester, and the fantastic Mr. Peter Van Ziel from the Checkers Cookery School in Deal. Yeah, yes. Thank you. Thank you all, and thank you to Bird for co-hosting the show.
Awesome.
We'll be back with another show next week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your tweets. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for your support. Have a fantastic week, and we will see you all soon.
Bye
for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.